Good enough. Jean-Luc, carry on.
All right.
My wayward son.
I was just about to kill this gym leader.
There'll be peace in that gym leader when you are done.
No. We're like good to start.
Which one did you get?
I got Brilliant Diamond. I'm going to try to
Me
do
too,
it.
Buddy.
Yeah, it was the one that I played back in the day.
This is the only generation of Pokemon I never played.
Wait, really?
Yeah, this is my first time.
Interesting. Okay, that's cool. It was the last one that I played before I stopped playing Pokemon.
My roommate said the same thing last night.
Oh, really? That's funny. It was like, it came out, I think I was in like fifth grade when it came out. Maybe I was in fourth grade. But it was like right before, you know, Pokemon became uncool.
I didn't get a DS until, like, Pokemon Black and White were coming out, so I just totally missed that generation.
Yeah, I actually got a DS specifically. It was, like, I got a DS and I got Pokemon Diamond, and it was, like, how my parents taught me a lesson about budgeting money was
cute.
So that I could save up for a DS and Pokemon Diamond. This is the Comics Podcast. This is episode 278. I'm here. Emily's here. You've heard us talk. Chad and Alex are here. You'll hear them talk in a bit.
My favorite is Pokemon Blood Diamond. There's a lot more casualties in that one.
Okay. I'm sure
there are a lot of, like, edgy, fake Pokemon games you could have picked, but Blood Diamond, good joke.
Yeah. It's on brand.
I'm going to keep all the silence there for that, just so...
You should.
So the listeners can hear your disappointment twice. Once when you talk, and twice when you
don't talk.
The
silence was like
six
times longer than whatever's going to be left in, so just remember that, dear listeners. And there we go again. Wow.
Yeah, more silence.
The issue is, we talked before the podcast, and that's the number one rule of podcast. You as soon as you get in a call, you record, because the best material is in the first 2 minutes. So.
Just use Zencaster so that Alex can hit the record button arbitrarily.
Oh, would that I could.
I hate Zencaster, and I will never use Zencaster.
But anyway,
hello.
Emily, how are you enjoying your first time through Gen 4?
Well, I haven't played a lot of it yet, because I spent most of yesterday morning soft resetting to try to get a female starter, and I did.
Okay. That seems like a massive waste of time. But
it is, but, you know... It's what I chose to do. So I'm sick, so I get to spend my time however I want until
Fair
I'm
enough.
Better.
And Fair
I did get a female Chimchar, and I am naming all of my Pokemon after Summer Camp Island characters. So I named my Chimchar Hedgehog, which doesn't make any sense because Chimchar is a monkey. But, you know, that's the choice I made. John, which starter did you pick? You seem like a Piplup guy.
Yep, absolutely a Piplup guy. I picked Piplup the first time I played. I picked Piplup this time. I'm always sad when I inevitably have to evolve Piplup into Prinplup, because as much as I like Empoleon, Prinplup sucks, and Piplup is the most adorable little guy.
I don't even know what Prinplup looks like.
He looks like... It's the extremely, like, second evolution thing, where he looks like Piplup when Piplup turned 14 and had an awkward teenage phase.
See, but
That's
what I love about middle Evos, is that they look like weird gangly teenagers.
Except Quilava, who just looks like so cute. It's like
my favorite
Cyndaquil's
Pokemon,
cute.
Quilava.
Quilava's cute. And then Typhlosion's scary.
Quilava is adorable. I think that I enjoy that like aesthetic. I find it endearing. But I think in some cases it's more endearing than others. And
sure.
Wow, I hate Empoleon.
Okay, fuck you.
Do you
what
hate penguins?
What an awful design.
Fuck
do you hate penguins, Chad?
I've seen way worse final Evos for a water starter.
Are there a lot of penguins in the Midwest that don't look like this?
I don't like the suit and tie. It's stupid.
It's
he
awesome.
Does have a tie.
It's great. I love
he's
Empoleon.
He's a fancy little guy.
He's
dumb.
He's a high-class guy.
He's got Aquaman's trident. That's cool.
I do not regret my decision to jump off a Pokemon when I did.
That's fair.
Was last one you played Silver? Crystal?
Yeah.
Jesus! You jumped off quick, Chadley!
But I think you played the DS ones, too.
I played Soul Silver, yeah.
Yeah.
Soul Silver's a good game.
That comes back a bit. Well, it's interesting because, like, I mean, I haven't played this one yet, but looking at, like, Soul Silver versus Silver, like, they added a lot of stuff, it seems. But from your guys, is it just like a one-for-one remake of the Diamond and Pearl?
Well, the problem with this game is that it's not actually made by Game Freak. They outsourced this baby, and it definitely shows in a lot of the decisions.
I mean, it is more or less a one-for-one remake of the originals. There's some differences. I mean, some of the quality of life changes from Sword and Shield are here. Things like the like default, like all of your Pokemon having EXP share, and like the moves telling you, like that it tells you which moves are super effective or not very effective. Like that stuff is all here. And like some of the Pokemon are different as well. I looked ahead and looked at what the exclusive, the like type specific Pokemon are. So some of that stuff is different, but in terms of like the actual content, it seems like it's exactly the same. Mm-hmm. Even like right down to the end game being the same. The problem, and I think that this is probably what Emily is alluding to, is that because it was outsourced to a non-Game Freak company, I don't know who, I don't remember the name of the studio that developed it.
Hold on, I'll pull up the name, you keep talking.
The switch to a 3D art style also came with this fucking dog shit chibi style for the human models that it just looks horrible, and there's no excuse for it, because when you go into the battles, it looks like Sword and Shield. It looks a little worse, but like it looks like a 3D Pokemon game when you go into the battle screens, but when you're in the overworld and running around, it does not, and it looks horrible, and the models are really bad. They move around the screen really awkwardly. There's a shit ton of motion blur for some reason.
I don't like the motion blur.
And the back, like the entire back, even when you stand still, everything outside of like, I don't know, the direct pixel radius around your character is like oddly blurred.
I don't like it.
It just looks horrible. Like we were playing this yesterday. I was playing it. I was in a Discord call with a couple other friends, and one of them was playing it, and he remarked that like he made it like a half hour into the game and like had to put it down because he was getting a headache from the motion blur. And because the Switch games have such dog shit like menus and customization, you can't like turn off things like that. Like if I'm so used to now, like if I'm playing a game and the motion blur really frustrates me or bothers me, I can just go into the settings and turn it off. But of course, I cannot do that with this game. And so that side of it is really frustrating.
The company that makes this game is ILCA, which stands for I Love Computer Art.
Me too.
And you that's know, the reason I wanted hope to bring it up is because I thought that was funny.
I hope that if they love computer art, you know, this is not an exam computer art they love.
The problem is, what I don't actually, like, in concept, I don't mind the chibi art. And, like, when they even showed off, like, the first trailer, I was like, oh, this is really cute. I actually kind of like this. But watching it in game is just, it's not great, and it's unfortunate because it feels like they're trying to kind of crib off of the remake of Link's Awakening, which I actually really like and is fucking gorgeous, but this is just not that. And part of the problem, I believe, is that ILCA, I don't know that they've actually ever made a full game on their own. From what I can tell, they mostly, like, have helped out with other games, and they made Pokemon Home, which is, like, the app that you can use to, like, store Pokemon from other games in, like, a central location on your Switch. But, I think they were just woefully unprepared for the task of making this game, and it's unfortunate because, like, I already hate the fact that Game Freak has kind of written themselves into this corner of, like, one, they have to put out a new Pokemon game each year, which is ridiculous, and two, they have to remake all of the old games because they started remaking the games, and now people expect them to remake all the games, and it seems like they tried to find a happy medium here by outsourcing Pokemon Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl and focusing the actual, like, Game Freak resources on the upcoming Pokemon Legends Arceus. And I don't know. It's just kind of disappointing. I wish that, like, this company didn't I don't know what the machinations are behind this, but I wish that they would maybe spend a little longer on Pokemon games and not be trying to hit this deadline of a new Pokemon game every year. And also, I don't know what the solution would be, but it unfortunately has resulted in this game, which this should not have been a $60 game. This should have been a $40 game at most.
Yeah, it was surprising to me that when I went to buy this that it was $60. I guess I should have known that, but also just based on what I'd seen and now based on playing it, it does just feel like, it doesn't even feel like, you know, Heart Gold and Soul Silver, or even like Fire Red and Leaf Green, or any of the other remakes they've done up to this point, which some of which I've played, some of which I haven't, but from my understanding have like significant new content added to them,
yeah,
in addition to the, you know, basics of the original games.
Because they were all actually made in-house by Game Freak.
Well, exactly. It also seems like they haven't been doing that recently. Like Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire were basically one-for-one ports of the old games too. I think the last one that they did a full, like, hey, ground up was Soul Silver.
Well, Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee are pretty, I mean.
Yeah.
Those are remakes
with added content.
Those are different in a bad way.
I wouldn't say they have more content, though. They're just like, but they definitely are different. Yeah,
they are different.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, arguably they have more content, but some of the story or whatever, or like things that you can do post game, like you can meet some, there's more things to do post game than. Sure. I didn't play a lot of the first gen. My first Pokemon game was Pokemon Yellow, but like it seems like there's a little more you can do after beating the game than it was in the originals. But they also like took away certain things to fit more of the like Let's Go branding.
So yeah. Do you guys regret getting the games, or
I don't
like, hey, even if it's bad, it's still Pokemon and I enjoy Pokemon.
Well,
that's how I feel about
bad.
Pokemon. Any Pokemon game is going to be a Pokemon game, and that's what I enjoy about it. Even if, sure, like, this has been more disappointing than other Pokemon games I've played.
Honestly, it just feels like such a downgrade after playing Shield or Sword earlier this year, mm-hmm, which genuinely, like, I mean, I talked about it when I was playing it. I had problems with Sword, but it genuinely felt like the first time I'd played a Pokemon game that was actually trying to do something meaningfully different with the formula.
Yeah.
And was really refreshing. And the DLC post-game stuff for Sword is genuinely fantastic.
Super fun.
It's so good. And then, like, with Arceus, with Pokemon Legends Arceus, it also seems like they are trying to totally reinvent, or not, maybe not totally reinvent, but restructure what a Pokemon game is. And so I understand why this had to get farmed out, because it does seem like they're putting a lot of development resources into Pokemon Legends Arceus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I would have appreciated a remake of, because I did love these games at the time. I do have a lot of nostalgia for them. And if they are going to remake them, I would have preferred a remake that was a little bit more loving of the source material and felt less like an obligatory, we have to put this out. And also we can charge $60 for it because we know you fucking idiots will pay it. And I know that I'm one of those idiots paying it, so I can't really...
Yeah. Just lacing up my clown shoes as I pre-ordered Pokemon.
That's exactly it, because like, you know, two out of the four of us have bought it. And I just, you know, listened to you guys talk about how, hey, it's kind of a not... Like, it's still the, you know, Diamond and Pearl, but like kind of a disappointing port remaster thing. And I'm like, oh yeah, I want it for Christmas. I want to play it.
Yeah, and I still like, I played it for like 4 hours yesterday in between Halo Infinite sessions. And then after I got done playing Apex Legends for like until 2:30, I stayed up for another hour playing it. And then I woke up this morning and the first thing that I did was play more of it. So, I mean, ultimately, like, it's the kind of thing where there's a lot of people like this now that are like, you know, us, and not like Chad, in that, you know, that Pokemon formula is just, like, gonna keep doing it for us, and that's just what it is.
Basically, every handheld console that I have bought ever in my life, or been given ever in my life, was in service of playing whatever new Pokemon game was out.
See, it's funny, because when I got a Switch, it was not with the intention of playing Pokemon, And I was honestly like, oh, you know, I played Moon in 2017 or 18 or whatever. And I was like, yeah, I played a Pokemon game a few years ago. I don't need to play a new one. But then, you know, as soon as I had sort of finished my time with Animal Crossing, I was like, damn, I have this Nintendo Switch now. And I played a couple other games on it as well. But I was like, I've got this Nintendo Switch now. I can play the new Pokemon games. And then I did that. And now I'm playing another one.
I will say, if you're itching for, you know, classic Pokemon content, like, you know, the reds and the silvers and the emeralds and that kind of stuff.
I have a GBA emulator.
Like. Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. But like, you know, for the price of that game, I think it's like in Canada, it's like $79, which is a lot. But for that same price, you can get yourself a Retroid Pocket and load it up with Pokemon Crystal.
I mean,
Pokemon,
I'm going to be honest.
Pokemon Emerald.
God, Alex, are you my wife, like, complaining and, about the fact that I keep buying games instead of just playing emulators?
You know, the Retroid Pocket 2 is a great, great little console.
I know that you like your Retroid Pocket, but honestly, don't even buy some. Like, emulators are free. Like,
no, but it's like, don't it's even like buy a, something it's like a cute it. Handheld it's... console that's cheaper than getting a just Game Boy Advanced, and I can play all the games.
Yeah, but you can emulate stuff on your phone if you want it to.
Yeah, but I don't want to play games on my phone.
Yeah,
I want to play it on a cute console.
You don't get the tactile sensation, though, on a phone.
I want to press the buttons.
It's a cute console. I don't know. Like, I'm
just
going to play it on a
controller for your phone.
What the fuck? No.
No, that's stupid.
You're making things too complicated, John.
You are.
It's not that complicated. Just download an emulator.
No, I don't want to play on my PC. I want to play in, like, the bathroom while I'm, like, you know.
Yeah, so download an emulator on your phone.
No.
No buttons on the phone.
It's not the same. Once they took buttons away from the phone, it's just gone downhill ever since.
It even comes in GameCube purple, so.
Oh,
that thing's cute.
I like it. Oh, that's really adorable.
Yeah, I'm siding with Alex on this.
But I will say, Jean-Luc, it is just an Android. Like, it's just like inside, it's just an Android phone.
And that's
but it's
fine.
Like, you know,
yeah, exactly.
You got the form factor around it. You got
I bet you like, could buy a case for an Android phone that you could put, like, that would connect to the USB-C port and would have joysticks and buttons on it.
Those definitely exist. I have a friend that uses one of those to play Genshin Impact.
Oh, that's shit. Okay, yeah, well, that is pure cringe. That is pure fucking cringe.
But this one, like, okay, like, it looks like a Game Boy Advanced, and, like, I can play all the Pokemons on it, and it's like, what, getting Pokemon Red now is, like, $100, and it's like...
I bet it actually has a backlight.
It is. It's LCD screen, you know? LED, I don't know. There's letters in there.
Letters.
The point is, there's a lot of Pokemon things for Pokemon people.
Yeah. And speaking of things that, video games that I have nostalgia for from my childhood, Alex, you and I have made the pilgrimage to Halo Infinite.
Yeah.
I don't believe, when was the last time you launched Overwatch?
I think I played it once this, because I think we played it once this week, but it was
we
like
did. That's
a,
true.
Maybe it was last week, but it's like something where I don't feel like going back to it. And I mean, I love Overwatch. I'm sitting in an Overwatch chair. But Halo Infinite is really fun, and that's from someone who's never gotten into a Halo game, mostly because whenever I play with it, I just get clowned on, because it's like, oh, let's play Halo Reach. And it's like, okay, sure. And then everyone's played that game for like 15 years, and they're all like, hehehehehe. But Infinite's really fun. It's like perfect arcade action that, like, even if you lose, you don't feel too bad. And the gunplay is so good. The melee sort of combat finishing shields style is really cool. And it's free to play. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it is. It has just been an amazing experience, like, getting back into a Halo game after, you know, the sort of wet farts that were Halo 4 and 5.
Fuck off. Halo 4 was great.
The Halo 4 campaign was decent. The multiplayer was horrible.
Multiplayer was fun.
I don't know. Adding the, like, Call of Duty style, like, progression unlocks progression system did not help that game.
It wasn't my favorite thing.
It had too many guns.
Nah, I will stand. I think Halo 4's multiplayer is better than most of them. It's definitely better than 2.
Yeah,
it's
but
probably
Combat
better
Evolved
than 1.
Combat Evolved and 2 are outdated. Like, are definitely outdated at this point. Although I will say, the versions of, like, the Halo 2 multiplayer that's in the Master Chief Collection is really good.
I didn't like that.
Halo 3 and 3 and Reach are the ones that, like, in terms of multiplayer that I would mostly go back to.
I don't like 3 so much anymore. I think Reach holds up the best, having gone back and played them.
Yeah. Well, 3 is just a very old style of FPS that, like,
yeah,
my Zoomer brain can't really comprehend anymore. It's like, what do you mean there's not a sprint button? What do you mean there's not a slide, a power slide? Which
Death
is
Star
part
was
of
Battlefront 2 for me. Oof.
Oh god, yeah, it's hard. I mean, after playing so many, like, especially after playing Apex for like two and a half years at this point, it's like that is a game that is like all about movement. And one of the cool things about Halo Infinite is that, like, it goes back to a lot of what was cool about, you know, what I liked about the old Halos in terms of, like, the basic structure of it. But, you know, there's a power slide, there's, like, movement pickups, everyone has a sprint, so it definitely feels more more movement-oriented, more mobile in that way. And I know that Halo 5 introduced a lot of that stuff, which was cool, but also, I think, took it maybe too far in a different direction, and a lot of that has just been abandoned in favor of making a game that feels like Halo 3 and Halo Reach, but just, like, updated and,
nice.
And contemporary.
It's really cool.
So I've been having a lot of fun with it. And Chad, I'm so sad that we cannot share this joy with you.
We were very excited to play with you.
I was really excited to play, to get some games in with you, but
yeah, I was telling Karen about this too, because we all wanted to play together. My computer can't run it. There's maybe a macro or some kind of script I can run that'll reduce the texture quality.
Yeah.
Do you have an Xbox One?
No.
Or a Series? Okay. Well, then, that won't help.
Well, we have the old
Xbox One, yeah.
Yeah, I do have one of those.
I don't know if Infinite's on there.
Not yet. I think at some point it will be. Well, here's the thing. Is my computer is theoretically better than an Xbox One, so this game, at some point, should be able to run on it.
Sure.
But it might not be anytime soon.
Hmm. Well, I guess keep checking back in.
Fingers crossed. It's been fun. It is not the most well-optimized game at this point. We've definitely, like, I've definitely had to, like, really fuck with some settings to get the FPS to be stable. And I know, I don't know, Alex, I think you've had fewer problems, but that's, you have a way
computer. I got a pretty beast of a computer, and I'm getting like 100 FPS.
Yeah, right.
So I don't know what the comparison is, but it's also nice to see, like, I mean, someone doesn't really have an affinity for Halo, that, like, the community seems very, very happy with it. And I remember Halo 5, people weren't so happy about it, and, like, the, I don't know, some story stuff going on. So it's been a while since, like, a game has been, like, just like, yeah, everyone's liking it. It's multiplayer, it's arcadey, it's good drop in and drop out action.
But well, they actually fixed the battle pass. You can actually progress through it now. It doesn't take forever to progress in the battle pass. But yeah, I've been really enjoying it. I just wanted to touch on that briefly. Emily and Chad, I know I've been talking about a lot of video games. What have you all been up to this week?
I've already talked a lot, so I'm gonna let Chad go.
I went to a death metal concert.
Heck yeah!
Oh, that's Wednesday. Right. How was that?
It was pretty fun. It was in Madison, which is about a 2.5 hour drive. So we left after work around 5:30-ish. Drive up was fine. We got there like 10 minutes before Shadow of Intent. We were getting ready to go. Like, they were starting to sound check, and we were like concerned that, like, oh, maybe we're gonna see Signs of the Swarm, because it seemed kind of early, for this, you know, second to last band to go. But yeah, then all of a sudden the sense for their one song kick in, and it's like, oh, I guess we arrived just in time. We got a fucking awesome parking spot. The venue was really packed, which was kind of surprising, just because, like, being in a crowded area after a year and a half, 2 years of stay the fuck away from people was an adjustment.
Yeah.
But we found a spot in the back, because I didn't want to be anywhere near the front or the middle where the mosh pit was going to be, and there was definitely one of those. It was cool though. I don't get to see a lot of, like, this kind of music live, so every time I do is kind of a treat. Just, like, the crazy, like, heaviness of, like, the kicks and the bass, like, you could feel the whole damn building shake when they were doing blast beats. It's really something else. It was fun watching Ben, who is, like, a really, you know, big inspiration for me as far as metal vocals go, just, like, being up on stage and doing his thing. And also, his highs really don't sound very healthy when he does them, and he was chugging water like every other song. So I don't know how much longevity he's gonna have if he's actually doing some of these techniques wrong, because he looked beat to shit by the end. He only played a 40-minute set, too, which kind of sucked. I don't know if that's normal for that kind of music, because like I said, I don't see like a whole lot of it. When I saw Winter Sun, they were definitely playing for like an hour and a half. But also, Yari does a lot of singing, and some of the backup, some of the guitar players do backing vocals for the really low-end screaming, so he doesn't do that.
Yeah,
so he's got like a very specific range.
I will say, like, when I've seen, like, Mastodon and Eminem Earth, and it's not exactly the same, but even bands like that will, like, play shorter sets. Like, even Opeth played a shorter set. I don't think the vocalists can sustain hour and a half sets doing what they do.
That makes sense.
Especially since most of them fucked their vocal cords in the early stages of their career, you know, trying to do that.
Back before there were, like, doctors who were like, hey, let's work on that. Let's make you sing.
I know. Hopefully. I think part of it too is just like the speed, you know, the drumming and the guitar playing too. Like, I mean, the genres are just like physically taxing. Born of Osiris, I guess, played for about an hour and 10. We only stayed for like 45 minutes just because we had to drive back. They were really good. More on the metalcore side than the deathcore side, but still like really heavy, gnarly, bouncy music. Like the mosh pit for them was fucking big, and their sound was massive. I don't know what exactly set them apart. Like, Shadow of Intent sounded good, but they didn't have, like, the, like, big, captivating sound you want. They sounded a little more like an opener than a headliner. I don't know if that was because they only had the one guitarist, or if it was just the way the guitars were kind of balanced to let the vocalist poke through better in the mix. So, like, they had to maybe cut some of the high end off the guitar. But I wasn't as spellbound watching them as I was watching, like, Nea Bliviscaris and Winter Sun, who were really on some other plane of existence as far as what they were doing, but also different kind of subgenres. It was a good time, though. It was kind of fun trying to, you know, I was always keeping one eye on the mosh pit a bit just to see how big it was going to get. And it was always kind of ebbing and flowing, and it just, you know, at one point it got pretty big, and then people were going pretty nuts, and then it kind of shrunk back down to something a little more manageable as I think people got tired. But it was a good time on the whole. I really enjoyed it. It was nice to be just kind of at a concert again. I haven't gotten to go to so many of them in a while.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. I am really happy to be going back to concerts again. As well. So I'm glad
I went to one on Saturday, and it was like the same sort of like, took a while to get comfortable just like being there. But like, it was so many people, and it was like, so it was this guy named Jeremy Zucker, Pop Man. But the line to get in was like two things around the block. Because I guess for general admission, people wanted to get in the front, but we had reserved seats and stuff. And it was just like so many people in like kind of a small space, and it was like, oh, this is okay. But everyone was double vaxxed and everything, so I guess it makes it feel better.
I don't know why is it that when I Google Jeremy Zucker, one of the first like suggested searches is how can I contact Jeremy Zucker? I don't know who this man is, much less want to contact him.
I know that the people wanna know. How to contact Jeremy Zucker. Go to his concert. Probably an easy way to do it.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like a good plan.
Front row. Say hi. Born March 3rd, 1996. Same year that I was born, so that's cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
But I know we're probably about to transition into comics,
yeah,
but
for sure.
I did start watching the League of Legends TV show. I don't have a lot to say about it, except that it's very pretty, and the animation is just like, it's probably some of the best implemented 3D animation that I've seen in a television show, like, at all, period. Like, it's just really fucking beautiful and incredible. I've only seen, like, 3 episodes, and I think there's about 7 out right now. 6 or 7. Yeah. And
I think there's 9 now, because I think the... Oh, no, there are going to be 9 tonight.
Okay. I think there was like 7 the last time I checked, but that was before the latest episode.
Comes out on
Saturday.
I think
came out today. But, it's very pretty. I don't know anything about League of Legends except from, seeing cosplayers at conventions. So that's how I knew who Jinx was. But, I mean, yeah, like the show seems pretty cool. That's all I got.
I watched the first 3 episodes and thought they were pretty good. I couldn't disagree more about the animation, though.
Really? You don't like it?
Pretty bad.
Yeah. Oh my god.
I think it looks like a 2007 video game cutscene.
I feel like the art style that they give, like the illustrations for characters, like I haven't played the game, I've seen people like send me pictures of characters, and it feels like they've really translated the style that they use for like illustrations in League of Legends into an animation style. And I don't know. I thought it was very pretty, and I think more animated shows should take risks with 3D animation in like being more stylized and not trying to look like, I don't know, realistic. Like, this show looks very painterly in a way that I find aesthetically appealing. But, you know, I guess it's not for everybody. I liked it a lot.
Fair enough.
I watched 20 minutes of Cowboy Bebop, and I think you should watch the anime.
I've started rewatching Cowboy Bebop just this past week, and I've only got about 6 episodes left because I was watching it while I was sick, so I had a lot of time on my hands. I've had strep throat. I've alluded to this multiple times in the episode, but I've been sick this past week, so I've had a lot of free time that I've spent on my couch, and most of that time has spent rewatching Cowboy Bebop because John and Chad, I don't think either of you have watched much of Cowboy Bebop, but the show is like 30 episodes. And
I've seen all of it.
I've seen Cowboy Bebop.
It's like 30 episodes. Okay, well, you can forgive me.
It's a classic anime. It's like the pinnacle of genre.
It's too bad they haven't seen it, though.
You can so it's about a guy, and his name is Spike. Assuming that John Luke had seen an anime that I didn't know about.
Oh, yeah, no, that checks out. That's fine. Also, he does talk about Ava enough, so, I mean, if you saw Ava, I would assume he's seen Akira and Cowboy Bebop.
Correct.
I watched
Akira. I've seen Akira multiple times. But
that's good, because otherwise I would demand that you did. But
no, I like Akira.
The Cowboy Bebop anime is like 30 episodes, and I watched 20 of them in like 2.5 days.
Nice. Oh, it's so good. Yeah, and the live action is just like they seem to be doing like a shot for shot remake, which is like okay. So I'll probably continue watching it, but 20 minutes in, it's like, huh. The action just looks better in animated form. So.
Yeah, I was going to watch the first episode of the new one, or the live action before this, but then I just, like, decided to continue to read more comics instead, which was probably, I don't know if that was a good trade-off, but it was certainly a trade-off.
Nice.
Yeah, what I've seen of the live action show looks...
The clips floating around look atrocious, which is really unfortunate.
I haven't seen anything.
I am not surprised at all.
Like so far, like, there hasn't been any, because there was an article that was like, is Cowboy Bebop like Deadpool the movie? And I'm like, what? And there hasn't been any of that yet, so that's cool. But
did you just watch one episode, or?
Yeah, I mean, the first episode's like 50 minutes, so I'm like,
yeah,
30 minutes in.
Okay, yeah, that tracks.
But,
all
right. I suppose comics time.
That's enough other stuff. It's comics time.
It's comics time.
Comics time.
It's my favorite typeface.
Yeah, there were a few comics this week. It wasn't like that big of a week, which is always nice.
A little bit of a light week.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. A light week used to mean like 4 things, and now it means like 8 books, 9 books.
Oh, those were the days.
I know, right?
Although, anyway, when we were doing Rebirth, the light week was like 25 comics.
Well, that's true. But we did too much during Rebirth. We definitely did too much at that point. But yeah, I don't know. Where should we start? Do we want to start with the controversial comic that was finally released this week?
What's that one?
The comic that made a million people who are never going to read it very angry.
Yeah, lots of people got mad online about Superman Son of Kal-El.
Oh,
it was good.
Was this the first one with the kiss?
Did you read the issue?
No, I read it. I just thought they kissed before.
No, this is the kiss.
This is the most image that people have been plastering everywhere.
Yeah, it is the most awkward lead-in to a kiss I think I've ever read in a comic.
Heck yeah.
I didn't think it was that bad.
It wasn't that bad.
It was a little awkward, but it wasn't that bad.
They're talking, and he's like, oh, I literally can't be hurt. You're the one person in the world that I'm the one person in the world you don't have to worry about.
And then they're just making out. It was kind of cute. Like, it wasn't like... the greatest, but...
No, you misunderstand. I don't think the context is bad. Like, I thought that conversation was like, oh, okay, cute. They're, like, flirting a little bit. And then they're just... The next page is just them making out, which is like... It just felt very sudden to me.
That felt like a very quick kiss, and they were both like, I guess that happened. And then
it was
like, shit, I gotta go.
Full page spread. We don't know how long it took.
It was a nice, meaningful smooch, but I don't think I would consider it making out.
Fine.
Their hands were not doing anything near anyone else, so I wouldn't call it making out.
Do
you make out with your hands? Is this how it works?
I think making out is just when you, like, kiss. So, you know what? To me, this is making out.
If you know what making out is, please send us an email at thecomicspodcast@gmail.com.
You can do that. I don't know if anyone checks that. I thought it was a decent issue. Aside from that, I've been generally, like, less enthused about Superman Son of Kal-El than some of the other
Tom Taylor joints,
yeah. But this was a decent issue. I mean, the conceit of it is like, I'm pretty sure this is ripped from All-Star Superman. Or it may not be from All-Star, but there is definitely a very iconic Superman comic where this happens, where he is like, he gets overloaded and he sees and hears everything that's going on at once. And so he has to go all over the world and save a bunch of people in a bunch of different scenarios. There's a flood in France and some journalists who were kidnapped by some guys in Africa. A girl got lost in the rainforest. COVID cases are overrunning the hospitals, so he has to, you know, get people to other hospitals.
Dude just takes a bridge with them, and he's like, don't worry, I'll bring it back. And it's like, you've compromised the structural integrity of that bridge, dude. You can't just bring it back and it works again.
He didn't even bring it back!
See, you're nitpicking here. But it's also it's pretty fucking cool that he just was like,
I don't have time
to take these cars and ambulances one by one. I'm taking the whole goddamn bridge with me.
It
was a neat visual. Like, you know, good for him, I guess. But
look, man, in this year, the
DC have to pay for that one.
They have to pay for all of the infrastructure damage caused by superheroes and fighting with supervillains. Like,
I feel like we've had this conversation before. It's like, want to write a superhero comic from the perspective of an insurance guy?
Oh, yeah.
Please. That would be so good. I like this comic. I don't disagree that the conversation leading up to the kiss was like a little like... I feel like it could have maybe used another pass in, like, the editing stage before making it to the drawing on the page phase. But, like, cute issue.
It was not my favorite kiss of the week, but it was a good kiss.
It wasn't my favorite kiss of the week either, definitely.
No. My favorite kiss of the week happened in a bit of a culty area, in a bit of a place where people eat other people and the sun is always shining.
Eat the rich, baby! This week
I thought we were talking about Ma.
This week, right? Well, I mean, there was some stuff in Ma, I guess, but Eat the Rich is what I care about this week.
You want to tell the listeners why that might be?
Well, it's the reason I care about any comic, is when women kiss each other. That's why John Luke referred to this comic as having a very Emily moment, and what that means is that two women kissed each other.
Well, and there was the kiss, and then there was the, like, her thoughts after the kiss, you know? The whole, well, like,
the whole
bubbling sort of, like, thoughts going on there.
The whole lead-up, I had no anticipation that there was gonna be any gay in this comic. And then, like, they're, like, sitting on the beach, and they the housekeeper lady or whoever, I don't remember what her actual job is, she, like, kind of moves her hand to where her pinky is resting over, like, the main character girl's pinky, and I was like,
pinky touching.
And then, yeah, pinky touching is first base for lesbians, and then later they actually do have, like, a little saucy kiss, and then she's, like, freaking out after, and she's like, oh, my boyfriend's never kissed me like that. And I'm like, yeah, girl, he's never kissed you like that. I liked this issue a lot, and not even just like the lady kissing, like this story kind of this whole time has been a little like medium And I don't know, like, this was sort of an interesting escalation of the stakes of everything. And then, like, at the very end, like, she's, like, running away from his dad who's trying to murder her because he stopped her from, or she stopped him from murdering the other, the lady that wanted to quit. And, like, her boyfriend, like, as her, his dad is about to kill her, like, proposes to marry her, and then the issue ends.
It is a banger of a last page.
Extremely good.
The way it escalates in the final, like, third is just like, yes.
Yeah, yes. It was so good.
No, I think this is the second, there's one issue after this, I think.
Yeah, that's
right. It is a very good penultimate issue in that, you know, after the third issue, we now know that, like, oh, she kind of, like, has to eat people now. Oops. Oopsie. And that kind of, like, locks her into this. And so just seeing her, like, you know, the first, like, half or so of the issue of just, like, coping with that of, like, wow, this is my new reality, and this sucks. I don't want to eat people. I'm not really one of these, you know, rich assholes. I mean, I guess I kind of liked my boyfriend before, but I don't anymore. And like, it's just telling because, like, in the first couple issues, she's so, like, her boyfriend quit smoking, and, like, she was, like, you know, being supportive and trying to, like, keep it, like, keep him off, and, like, now he's smoking and taking a bunch of pills, and
he's smoking, like, a pack a day, and she, like, barely has anything to say about it.
Yeah, and she's, like, fucking drinking in the bathtub, like. It is just such a good portrait of, like, wow, the first 10 pages is just like, yeah, this is a person who, like, now hates her life, and her boyfriend also is, like, distant.
Something going on with him.
Yeah, like, and clearly he, I don't know, like, I don't know that their relationship was, like, perfect before, but, like, it's implied that, like, you know, they were trying to make it work, but now, like, ever since, you know, she found out that his family kills and eats poor people, it put a wrench in things.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, some people are understanding, but she was not. So it really gave me, like, Ready or Not vibes. It was just like that whole, yeah, like, rich family secret. And it
this
was
whole,
like,
premise,
yeah,
has been very Ready or Not.
Yeah. It's good stuff. And it makes that, like, scene that Emily was talking about land more. Cause, like, the first time you see her, like, if you get these, like, 10 pages of just, like, abject misery and depression, and then, like, they're sitting on the beach together, like, even before they kiss, and they're like
it's
hugging,
so,
and she has this big smile on her face. It's really cute. Like, it's really well done, and then it just transitions right back to, like, oh, it's a slasher movie comic now.
Yeah,
let's go.
And I'm glad that
it's good stuff.
Because I don't know how much, I mean, on one hand, they could go deep into this whole, like, oh, it's this, you know, these are people that eat people because they have to eat people because they ate people at one point. Now they got to eat people. But I'm not quite sure how they're going to wrap this up, but I'm glad that, like, I have faith that they're going to do it good. I hope they do. Uh-huh.
Yeah, this has been a really, you know, fun series. And I'm, you know what? I'm just glad that there are more comics that are being honest about, you know, what the rich are doing to us and the adrenochrome harvesting that's going on.
This episode brought to you by Adrenochrome Harvesting.
No, this episode will never be brought to you by Adrenochrome Harvesting.
Yeah,
I am. My last name is not Clinton. I do not.
So stop
kill
emailing
and
us
eat
at
babies.
The comics podcast at gmail.com. Like, we're not going to answer you. God.
I did not. I have never been into that weird square box structure on Little St. James. I have not witnessed the satanic rituals that Bill Gates, you know, partook in.
You have your own satanic rituals. Please write to us at.
Yeah. Do we want to talk about Maw? I know we were. Chad alluded to it.
Yeah.
And I think that this was this is definitely a one to talk about. Chad, do you want to come in here? I know you're not reading Eat the Rich anymore, but you are reading this one.
Yeah, and people are getting eated in this one now.
Hell yeah. Rich?
No, they're dumb. Well, they might be, but they're probably not.
Rich and dumb are not, like,
well,
mutually
considering
exclusive.
The bars they were going to, they didn't seem like they weren't screaming wealth, but
no, these are not. Yeah, these people aren't rich. At
one
least not, you know,
is,
eat the rich.
Looks
rich.
Like probably dead.
Yeah, the sister.
Yeah, that sucks.
Unforge.
Sucks to be her. It's funny too, because the whole thing is like, what horrible thing have men done to you? And she's like, nothing, I guess I should leave. And then she gets killed like whole pages later.
By a bunch of men.
By a bunch of men.
Yeah, that is the dramatic irony.
Her sister has turned into basically a vampire of sorts and will probably
a crocodile vampire.
Yeah. Hey, there should be more crocodile vampires.
Yeah.
She's a were-crocodile and I love it.
Is she a were-crocodile? Or is she like, I don't know, yeah, because she does know. Not completely. Anyway.
We don't know very much about, like, the logistics of her crocodile powers. But we do know that she's very spooky.
Yeah. And I think she also has a crocodile. That she is a were-crocodile. And also there's another crocodile, like a baby crocodile hanging out that she birthed at the end of the last issue, I think.
Oh, I kind of forgot all about that.
I forgot about the birthing. Whoa.
Yeah. I think better get really big before this is over, because I want to see some giant crocodiles fucking up stuff.
There's that great sequence where it like, hangs off of the roof by its tail bites one of the attacker's heads off. Yeah, no, the last, like, few pages of this, like, are, like, full-on into the, like, body horror aspect. This book has sort of been like teasing out for the last few issues, but this is just like we get to see it actually unfold for the first time in a way that is like, God, it is kind of gross, but also really cool and tragic. But you know, there's a certain degree of catharsis to you know her and her crocodile fucking up those guys at the end.
Absolutely.
After they kill her sister. But yeah, I do love the dramatic irony of her sister like wanting, like, her whole character up to this point has been like desperate. Like, she, like, the classic white woman trope of like being just so desperate to be oppressed in some way. And like at the end of the day, she just like can't be, because you know she's a white woman and her life is like not that bad. And then just like immediately goes from that to just being brutally murdered.
It's like, not that bad. Whack. Oh
yeah, in a way that is like okay, but in a way that is like yeah, well, you know, a lot of people have it not that bad until all of a sudden
they have it bad. Yeah.
And it's also like, I don't know, I feel like this, I don't want to, you know, get into it too much, but I feel like something like this issue coming out about like these three guys who are like, yeah, who are decide like, yeah, we're going to take this like justice into our own hands. Obviously it couldn't be planned, but like the fact that it came out the same, like literally like the day before Kyle Rittenhouse was acquitted of all of his charges it feels timely in that way. And I mean, it would have felt timely regardless, because that's sort of just the era that we live in now of like right-wing street violence. But it felt especially timely, and I think it just landed. It just hit harder than I think it might have. Like, I think it's a good comic, so I think it would have hit hard regardless. But it just like seeing them like try to take justice in heavy square quotes in their own hands and just killing a totally innocent person. And then, you know, one of them getting what they deserve. And I hope the rest of them get what they fucking deserve. I hope Kyle Rittenhouse gets what he fucking deserves, too. That's for sure.
You mean like a seat in the Senate in like less than 10 years?
Well, I mean, that's not what that is.
Hey,
that isn't what I mean.
Left. What else do you want to talk about?
That is what's likely to happen.
It's not what he deserves. Yeah. It's what he's going to get.
Yeah. We should hit some other comics, though.
About porcelain.
Porcelain,
yeah,
man, Porcelain's fucking gorgeous. What a strange book, but it is so captivating to look at.
This book is very cool.
All the like character designs are so weirdly like gothic Lolita extreme, and the colors are so striking. The really saturated oranges, the deep blacks and whites, like it's a, it's a very cool comic.
It's a very black, white, and red comic.
Yeah. Also, the cat saved the day. Did some hand biting.
Yeah.
Nom nom nom.
Good.
Yeah, this book continues just to be really striking. I'm really curious how they're going to cap this all off. At this point, given that this is also a 5-issue, I'm pretty sure. I am curious to see how they're going to end the whole story in the next issue. But I don't know. It is just so beautiful, and there's like just enough of like a character arc and story stringing it along for me to be super into it. I also like this even more so than a lot of other books I say this about. Really feels like it's meant to be written in one go. So I am I'm kind of looking forward to like this wrapping up and maybe just going through the whole thing like front to back.
I think this will make a really good trade.
Yeah, no, I'm sort of in that vein as well. Like, it doesn't really have, like, it sort of has cliffhangers, but it, like, just flows. Like, the flow from, like, the last panel to the first panel of every issue just is, you know, so well done in a way that we don't always see, like, in this kind of, like, serialized storytelling. It's fucking good stuff.
What'd you guys think of The Nice House on the Lake?
I like this issue. We have like 6 issues left. Like we're like just at the halfway point now. Uh-huh. But it feels like there's so much going on that like for as much as I enjoyed like the sort of flashback to some of these characters in high school, and I thought that James Tynion wrote them really well, and I found like all of their like interpersonal drama and the, you know, of course the one character Reginald knowing that like he's gonna, you know, kill everybody. Like I like having that sort of like, you know, guillotine hanging over them the whole time, I thought was really good. It does feel a little bit weird for like this to not advance the plot at all. And I know that like, you know, not everything needs to advance the plot in that way. Sometimes you can just do good character stuff, which is what this issue does. But it's sort of at the end of the day, like not a whole lot happens. And even the stuff that does happen, he just wipes their memories of it.
Yeah, that was a little a little cheaty. But
yeah,
I'm still like, it's funny. There's not really been a lot of plot to this comic. Like we're 6 issues in and we've gotten some rules established and kind of the size of the place. We know what Walter's up to. But as far as fixing things, as far as what comes next, like I'm still really not sure what to expect, right? And I think that's kind of cool. Definitely. But also looking at like, oh, we only got 5 or 6 issues left. I hope it wraps up well. I hope there is, if there isn't an ending planned, I hope they find one and make it work.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where like, even if this, like, even if the plot ends up being sort of like secondary and like it ends up being fine but not spectacular, there's just so much that I've loved about this comic, and I think a lot of that just does come down to, you know, Tynion writing these characters really well.
The MSN messaging they did back and forth, and like it's just like rawr because he's frustrated, and I was like, oh, this is like a weeb saying stupid shit like that. Look at this murder robot alien.
Well, it's such a great touch because it also humanizes him. And like, we've had him in like those sort of social contexts before, like in the first issue, there's that great bar scene with him and one of the characters. But this feels like it's even like on another level in terms of like how he literally says like, oh yeah, like I'm not like the rest of my kind. Like, they gave me human feeling, like, which also is just such a tragic, like, brutal way to live of like your purpose. And you know that your purpose is to annihilate the human race, and your parents or whoever created you turned you into something that is like not only responsible for wiping out the human race, but also the one guy who like has to build human connections and care about people. Like, that is so fucked up, man. You've got to feel a little bad for him.
I hate to make the comparison, but it's kind of Christ-like.
I don't know enough about Christ, but that's
really good friends with Wood.
Just the whole concept of like sending your child to like a place that you like, I don't know, intend to destroy at some point, and like he has to be the one to like take on like he has to be given like the feelings of a human to be able to like understand them. I don't know, Like,
this that's actually really interesting.
My very that's a really good Christian upbringing probably peeking through, but there were a lot of similarities that, like, I felt sort of peek through in some of the way that they explored his character in this issue.
Yeah.
Especially, well, like, the being given, like, human emotions and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting reading on it that makes me wish I knew more about theology and could, like, you know, try and draw more of those kinds of comparisons. But that's cool. But yeah, I mean, I really liked it. But
yeah. Yeah, I've been enjoying this comic, and I am very interested to see how this all plays out. I really like, I mean, the art in this book continues to be incredible, but, like, when they show fucking what's his name, like, and he actually reveals his, like, alien being self, which also, again, like, not to go back to religion, but kind of reminds me of the way that, like, quote unquote, like, biblical angels are described, like, as being
interesting,
like, sort of horrific and incomprehensible to behold by the human eye.
Take that, Lovecraft.
Yeah. what did you want to hit, Chad, before we wrap up here?
I read two issues of Robbins before we started.
Did you like the Nightwing's hair?
I mean, I could have not read those and been okay. They were fine. I really like the cartooniness to the art style. It kind of was...
I liked the art in this book.
Yeah, I didn't really care for it. It didn't do much for me. It felt like a house style, but not a good one.
I felt like one of the things that bothered me was it felt like they couldn't land on whether or not Jason Todd actually has, like, white in his hair. It felt like they were always dancing this line of, like, oh, it could just be, like, the way that the lighting is on his hair. And I thought that was weird.
Yeah.
Jason.
I kind of like the idea of all the Robins getting together and being like, man, that Batman sure fucked this up, huh? But I don't think there's enough of that. I feel like
I want
that story, not them banding together to solve a crime or whatever. That's a lot less interesting.
A lot more of that in the first issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. I feel like this would have been a good written by Tom Taylor book concept, but then again, he does that in the Nightwing book, so.
Yeah, which someday we'll go back to being the Nightwing
book,
stop being the fucking Fear State tie-in.
So there's going to be the cool book in December where they have, like, one image for the whole book, crazy stuff going on, right? But then they're kicking off a 2-issue or 3-issue crossover with Superman, Son of Kal-El. So, yeah.
Well, at least those are two books. We're reading those.
It's true.
Although, it's fucked up because those come out in the same week, so have fun knowing which one to read first, everybody. Oh, God. But yeah, cool. I guess we can go ahead and wrap it up there, since we are a little bit pressed for time, so that we can probably get this show to be under an hour for Chad's editing purposes. But yeah, you can find us online at Comics Podcast on Twitter, Comics Podcast on Facebook. You know the drill. Alex, where can people find you? Can people find you on the internet?
Yeah, if you want to. I'm at Alex Hanziuk on places, but I don't know. I don't really tweet, and I don't really Instagram. And yeah, thank you very much.
You can go look at all... You can go look at all his pictures on Instagram, though. I do it from time to time. You know, vibes. I don't, but...
Aww.
Emily, where can people find you?
They can find me by reading Batman Secret Files, The Gardener, #1, where Poison Ivy kisses 2 different women. It's all I have this week.
Damn, you love to see it.
Why did you talk about that in the book?
Where can people find you?
Find me at Bandcamp, anonym.bandcamp.com. I have music. Find me on Amazon. You Google my name, Chad Waller. I got books. You go to Steam and type in The Land of Glass, you can find my video game. More people should buy my video game, apparently, because I got a note from the bank saying, hey, that checking account for your business hasn't been used in a while. You need to confirm it's active. That's so I get to do that on Monday.
Oh, I have a Steam account. I could buy Chad's game now.
Oh, nice.
I saw the Green Knight. I forgot to say that.
Oh.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, I did forget to say that. We talked about it earlier in our group chat, though, so...
We did. I continue to see movies 6 months after they come out, so the Green Knight gets a six-month thumbs up.
When you see Pig, we will actually talk about that one.
Yeah, that's in the Redbox, too. I might do that next week. I want to watch a different movie first called Demolition Man that came out in the 80s.
Nick. Oh, yeah.
Just a little movie called Demolition Man that no one's ever heard of.
I had never heard of it until Cameron brought it up.
Really?
And I was like, oh, really? Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, Chad, you're only 40 years late for that one, correct?
It's funny because my neighbor has a bunch of shitty 80s sci-fi movies. I wonder if he has this one. And he's like, of course I have this one. And I was like,
Demolition Man come out in like 92? I think that's an early 90s movie.
Whatever. It's all the same.
Well, okay, no,
if it's 30 years, then you're good, Chad.
Is it a classic?
Yeah.
Yes. It is a classic of the sci-fi action genre.
I watched it in my ninth grade English class.
I'm under the impression it's not very good.
I mean, it's not.
It's still like, a classic, I guess.
Come on. There are plenty of movies that are classics that are not that good.
Yeah.
This is one of them. But also, I don't know, Wesley Snipes is fantastic, so...
Wesley Snipes is in it? That's cool. I don't know that.
Yeah, he's like... Stars. It's like him and Sylvester Stallone.
I thought it was Sandra Bullock and Sylvester Stallone.
No, you're thinking of
Sandra Bullock is in it. Sandra Bullock is in it, but like the whole thing is that it's like Sylvester Stallone versus Wesley Snipes. Like that's like the whole. Yeah.
I don't actually know what this movie's about.
I can tell.
Like, a specific scene in it, and he's like, you should see it if you get a chance. It's kind of a dumb movie. And I was like, okay.
Oh, it's really dumb.
It's got a really cool tagline or like a cool summary.
It's fun. That movie is, I haven't seen that movie in ages, but it's kind of fun.
Well, we'll see if I get around to it. But yeah, that's where you can find me, is talking about Demolition Man on Opinions Are Cheap.
Nice.
I'm
on Twitter at Mountain Dew Laker. And we'll be back more content for you next week. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
I just bought Chad's game.
Yay.